This is Tessa Davis from Don't Forget the Bubbles. This talk was recorded live at DFTB 17. Next year's conference is just around the corner, so check out the details at dftb18.com. Enjoy the show.
Thank you, Camille. And thank you, Ben, for introducing our simulation session. So what I really want to talk a lot about today is fidelity. So when we think about fidelity, when we think about simulation, a lot of us look at simulation as the high fidelity simulation that might be like this picture here, which might be in your very realistic looking sim lab that costs many, many thousands and thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars. And that is simulation. But so is this. And a lot of the difference, so this would be a very low fidelity equipment that we're using, but a lot of the difference comes down to the other elements of fidelity. And as medical educators, we're all about trying to find meaningful learning. And I use fidelity in lots of different ways in order to find meaningful learning for my learners. But I want to tell you today, I'm going to take you on a journey, and we're going to talk about how you can make the biggest difference to your learners. It's not the 100K mannequin, it's you that makes the biggest difference in the fidelity and the realism that your learners take. But before we delve into fidelity, why exactly are we doing simulation? Well, many of us will have seen this Miller pyramid, and simulation is coming in at the shows how level of competence, okay? So this is meant to be really high-powered learning for our learners. And it's going to give us meaningful learning for our adult learners, because our adult learners like problem solving, they like hands-on learning, they like to be able to incorporate these new ideas into their own learned experiences, and they want to be able to reflect upon their practice and go away and take what you're telling them back into their practice and incorporate it into their knowledge. So that sounds pretty easy. What we need is lots of money, a really great case, and just throw those learners in there and they should learn. But unfortunately, it's not that easy. And actually, if you don't do this well, you don't put a lot of thought and time into this, you can actually bring your learners to the point that they're either too bored to actually incorporate anything that you're learning, you're trying to teach them, or in fact, they're too anxious and they're unable to learn because you've taken them over this Starling curve of stress into a realm that they can't actually incorporate what you're trying to tell them. So I want to tell you today about the many facets of fidelity and about how it's much, much more than how real your mannequin is. And so I've laid out there what I think are some facets that we need to consider when we are considering bringing our simulation encounter to our learners. So functional and physical fidelity. Now, this is probably what we're very familiar with. And that can be brought into either the equipment that we're using or the environment. So if it's the equipment, the title of my talk was Toy Story. So we're going to use Toy Story as an example. So we've got Woody here. Now, Woody could be thought of as your low fidelity equipment. He doesn't do a lot. Maybe you can do some CPR on him. He doesn't really give a lot of feedback. You might do some bagging. Probably his chest isn't going to rise. But he would be your low fidelity equipment. So he doesn't function very highly, but you can still get some pretty valuable learning depending on the other aspects of fidelity that you put into that experience. Then we've got Buzz. Buzz might be our high fidelity equipment. He's got things that light up and noises that occur when you press buttons on his torso. You might use some great monitoring equipment alongside him to increase that equipment fidelity. Then you might think about, okay, well, there's other things I can use as far as my equipment in my simulations. I can use simulated actors. I might use Ben here. And I might say, okay, well, Ben, well, he's a pretty real-looking patient, isn't he? And then I can, to increase the functional fidelity, because I don't think Ben would like it if I intubated him, I might put on some part-task trainers on the side, or I might strap on an IV line so I don't have to actually stick needles in him. I might put some pouches that burst with blood when we impact upon them, those sort of things. So you can really tech up your simulated patients, and that can increase your equipment fidelity. And then we've got the environment. And so we do have the high fidelity sim lab, which can have a whole heap of money spent on it in order for it to look exactly like your operating suite or your resus room. We've got the ambulance service often does scenarios where they take an old beat up car and put the mannequin in the car and we simulate the accident there. So that can be a really good way of increasing the environmental fidelity. We do in situ sim, so that might be out in the field, or it might be in your actual clinical resus room. And these can increase your environmental fidelity. So I want to tell you a little bit of a story about in situ simulation. So we had the opportunity to run a course. It was a CPR course for surf instructors in Java. And so we took our mannequins over the plane in the little car, a long way down to the bottom of Java. And we brought our mannequins in situ to the surf instructors where they lived, where they worked. And we were teaching them CPR. And they weren't really that engaged. And part of this wasn't really the language barrier. We had people translating for us. They had a good hold of the language. We were there where they might have to do this. They want to save their clients because the clients are what pay them money in order for them to be able to eat and feed their family. But so they had all the reasons why they wanted to engage in this education, but they really weren't that engaged. And what we hadn't really thought about was the task fidelity. And what I mean by task fidelity is how real was this situation to them? So if we look at the first picture here, this is the group of surf instructors who were trying to learn CPR. So, see if I can make this work. Oh, yep. So the main guy here, he's pretty involved because he's probably thinking about, God, what am I doing with this mannequin? And this lady's standing over me and telling me that I have to keep pushing on the chest and keep breathing. But this guy's on the phone. This guy's checking out his toenails. And this one's eating his hat. Okay? So they're not really engaged in this learning. And what I hadn't thought about was that these were surf instructors. The people that they encounter are out in the surf with them. They're not likely to arrest while they're sitting there having a beer with them. If they're going to arrest, they're out in the water. And in fact, they had had people drown and had to pull them in and do CPR on them. So what we had to do was bring in that task fidelity. So we made them swim. We said, you got to swim out there. So your person that you're teaching to surf has just drowned out there. You got to swim out there and get them. The waves are coming. They're like, oh, okay, we better cover their mouth because the waves are coming and we're going to turn our back to the wave and we're going to keep paddling in. And then they got the mannequin down and then they did CPR. And everybody was engaged. And they took a lot more from that learning because it was real to them. That was the task fidelity. And that's what we need to do in our medical encounters. You cannot take the same sim and give it to this group of people, that group of people up the back, this group of people over here. You have to know who your learners are, what is real to them, where are they working, what are their resources. I do quite a lot of courses for GPs in rural and remote areas. If I bring my hospital-based simulation to that GP in the rural and remote area, they don't take anything from that because they don't have the cath lab to call for their MI. They don't have all and sundry coming down when they have an arrest in their clinic room. So you have to know your learners in order to make that task fidelity real. So you might say, okay, well, how the hell do I do this simulation thing then? So what I tend to start with is a storyboard. So I have a bit of a think about who I'm teaching, and I do my simulations based on either real cases, cases I've heard about, cases I've read about, cases that are really familiar to me, because if I'm not all over that case, then something's going to come up in that simulation, and it's going to fail because it's not going to be real. And I set out my story. I set out my intro. So most of my sims have a broad similarity. My intro, there's a deterioration, and then depending on what the learners do, they might either be a resolution or further deterioration. But when I'm thinking about my learners, I have a bit of a think about, what are they going to do? What are all of the possible things that they could do in that room? Because if I've prepared for all those things, then I can bring them back on track and ensure that I keep this real for them. Okay, so a bit like a choose your own adventure book, anyone who is as old as me, you had all these different ways that the adventure could go based on which pages you flick to. And if you're like me, you ended up going back and going, oh, I'm going to read them all. So I just keep reading the book, going through all the possible ways. But that's what you have to do for your learners. You have to think, what are all the possible things they could do? And then even then, sometimes they still manage to come up with something that you're like, where on earth did you get that from? And so like any good dungeon master, you have to prepare for disaster. What are you going to do if they have gone down that alley that you really didn't want them to go down? So I generally have a few get out of jail sort of options to throw in there. So in my medical simulations, that might be if they need help, a helpful phone call from the consultant, or suddenly a piece of information that comes to fruition that brings them back on track. Or if I really don't want them to go down some way that they're going, I might send in a screaming relative so that they get totally distracted and then we can get them back on track for their learning. So that's the disaster management that you have to build into these things just in case they come up with something you haven't thought of. All right, so that's all about task fidelity. Now we're talking about psychological fidelity, and I think this is probably the most important part of all of the facets of fidelity. And all too often, we come into a sim and we say to our learners, I want you to buy in. I want you to throw yourself into this. I want you to believe that this is real. And then we stand there as the educators, stressing about our script, stressing about the sim pad or the technology, trying to make it work for us, staring at that rather than engaging with our learners, and we're not making it real for them. Or we might be a bit embarrassed. We've gone in there as a Confederate and Ben told me to wear a silly hat or something, and I'm embarrassed about that and I don't act like I should be acting in that role. And that ruins it for them. So I want to tell you a little story about how important this psychological fidelity is. So we were running simulations as part of a course. It was an OSCE course, and it was high stakes. The people coming to our courses were sitting their final exams. This was really important for them to be able to perform in these simulations like they were the consultant. And the participants were told they had to get in there and they had to act like the consultant. And I had one particular participant who just could not do it. He just kept saying, this is not real. No matter what I do, this is not real. I can't do it. And so it was affecting his performance. His medical knowledge was good, but he didn't seem confident. His communication was flawed because he just wasn't buying in. He'd stand there, arms folded, didn't want to be there. And that meant that he was scoring badly. And he couldn't take feedback because we'd feedback this back to him. We'd say, look, you have to communicate differently. You have to act like you're confident. You have to act like you're in control of the team. And he kept saying, I can't. It's not real. I just can't do it. And blame the simulation. And then we came to a communication scenario. And I was the simulated patient in this scenario. I had very, very minimal props, chucked another shirt on. That's about all I did to change my character. Our room was just the workshop room that we were standing in. There was coffee mugs. There were five people staring at him. It wasn't like a grieving relative's room. But this communication scenario was for him to come and break bad news to me. To me as the wife of a man who had died in a cycling accident. So he came in and he sat down and he started breaking the news. and he told me that my husband had died. And I cried. And I sobbed. And I didn't make eye contact. And I couldn't talk. I couldn't compose myself. And the reason I was able to do that was because I imagined that I spent time visualizing that this was actually me, that they were, this was my family that was being torn apart by this tragedy. Those were my children I was going to have to break this news to. And because of that, I was able to bring myself into that character. And he was able to comfort me. He was able to answer my broken questions. He was with empathy. He was able to support me, and he almost cried. And then when we stopped the scenario and we said, okay, so now we're going to debrief, he looked at me wide-eyed, shook his head, and he said, my mind deceived me. I know that wasn't real, but that felt real to me, and I can do this. And I think we can't all cry on demand. I'm pretty good at it. but what we can do is spend some time really thinking about the character development of what we put into our scenarios. And in order to do that, I spend a bit of time thinking, who is this character? Who is this person I've thrown into this scenario that is helping my learners? What's their story? What's their past medical history? What's their social history? What do they like? Do they like skateboarding? Do they have a dog? Like, I spend some time thinking about those characters. I think about what motivates them, what makes them tick. I also think about how are they feeling when they're in that room, in that particular simulation, and how are they going to react? And in order to do that, I spend quite a lot of time using visualization. So I think about people that I'd known, patients that I've known, other colleagues that I've known that might have been in like this. And if I can pinpoint someone that may have been very like the one that I'm going to be putting into my simulation, then I think, well, how would they react in that situation? And that works for me. Other people, it might be that whole change of costume, putting on a wig, putting on a different shirt, getting themselves into character. And other people just can't do it. And I think as educators, we have to know ourselves. We have to know, can I get rid of my ego? Can I get rid of myself? Can I put myself into that situation and make it real for my learners? And if I can't, then own that and say, no, I can't do it. I just can't not feel silly in that situation. And then find somebody who can and tell them what you have envisaged for this character, what their motivation is, how they will react, and get them to do it for you. Because there's nothing worse than being in there and you don't believe it's real, because they won't believe it's real either. And this is my dad getting into character here in a communication scenario. So he is a doctor as well. I don't just randomly bring members of my family into scenarios. Okay, so the last facet of fidelity that I want to talk about is operational fidelity. And this is where it gets a little bit full on, I think. So operational fidelity, I think, might be Toy Story 5. We're not there yet in medicine. So operational fidelity is something that's come out of aviation industry where they go through all of the – they basically do audit and a bit like what you were saying with the continuous improvement cycle. So they look at audit and then they run multiple times through the same sort of encounters in order to do a threat and error analysis. They take the results of that analysis and then they use that to generate their learning outcomes by looking at what sort of successful behaviors allowed that threat to be resolved, or what sort of things were problematic and actually made that threat worse, if you know what I mean. And so in aviation, they have the impetus and the money to throw at that sort of analysis, and then they can use that to generate their simulations and then run those education sessions for their learners, so the pilots and the stewardesses, and then see whether that had an impact. And maybe that's where we're going to go in Medicine Monday. Maybe we'll go in our M&M audit, we found all these errors, and so we're now going to video the resources of this particular event. We're going to see if we can see the pattern, see what behaviours are good, what behaviours are not so helpful. Take that, make a simulation under those learning outcomes, run the simulation, and then go back and see what the impact of our education has been. At the moment, I think we're still at this stage of not being quite that complex about it. We're still at the stage of using a great case, using a common case, trying to get our learners to have our structure. But that's really the operational fidelity facet that we may get to in Toy Story 5. Okay, so just to wrap up everything, what I want you to take away from this is that there are many elements to fidelity that you can manipulate to make your education or your learning encounters more real for your learners. Many of them cost lots of money, take up a lot of resources, but some of them are as much as just using a pillow and taking your learners through with some really great acting, a great task that you've set, and really real scenarios. And those things are all up to you. You don't need that fancy pants mannequin. You just need you.